After lunch, Hoshino stood up, stretched his whole body, then went back to reception to take Oshima up on his offer of a cup of coffee. Since Nakata didn't drink coffee, he stayed on the veranda, sipping his tea and gazing at the birds flitting about the garden. "So, did you find anything interesting to read?" Oshima asked Hoshino.
"Yeah, I've been reading a biography of Beethoven," Hoshino replied. "I like it. His life really gives you plenty to think about."
Oshima nodded. He went through a lot, to put it mildly.
"He did have a tough time," Hoshino said, "but I think it was mainly his fault. I mean, he was so self-centred and uncooperative. All he thought about was himself and his music, and he didn't mind sacrificing whatever he had to for it. He must have been tough to get along with. Hey, Ludwig, give me a break. That's what I would have said if I knew him. No wonder his nephew went off his rocker. But I have to admit his music is wonderful. It really gets to you. It's a strange thing."
"Absolutely," Oshima agreed. "But why did he have to live such a hard, wild life? He would have been better off with a more normal type of life."
Oshima twirled a pencil around in his fingers.
"I see your point. But by Beethoven's time, people thought it was important to express the ego. Earlier, when there was an absolute monarchy, this would have been considered improper, socially deviant behaviour, and suppressed quite severely. Once the bourgeoisie came to power in the 19th century, however, that suppression came to an end, and the individual ego was liberated to express itself. Freedom and the emancipation of the ego were synonymous. And art, music in particular, was at the forefront of all this. Those who came after Beethoven and lived under his shadow, so to speak, Berlioz, Wagner, Liszt, Schumann, all lived eccentric, stormy lives. Eccentricity was seen as almost the ideal lifestyle. The age of romanticism, they called it, though I'm sure living like that was pretty hard on them at times. So, you like Beethoven's music?"
"I can't really say if I do or not. I haven't heard that much," Hoshino admitted. "Hardly any at all, actually. I just kind of like that piece called The Archduke Trio."
"That is nice, yes."
"The Million Dollar Trio's great," Hoshino added.
"I prefer the Czech group, the Suk Trio, myself," Oshima said. "They have a beautiful balance. You feel as if you can smell the wind wafting over a green meadow. But I do know the Million Dollar Trio version, Rubinstein, Heifetz and Feuermann. It's an elegant performance."
Mr. Oshima,"
Hoshino asked, looking at the nameplate on the counter,
"you know a lot about music, I can tell."
Oshima smiled. "Not a lot. I just enjoy listening to it."
"Do you think music has the power to change people? As though you listen to a piece and go through some major change inside?"
Oshima nodded. "Sure, that can happen. We have an experience, like a chemical reaction, that transforms something inside us. When we examine ourselves later on, we discover that all the standards we've lived by have shot up another notch, and the world's opened up in unexpected ways. Yes, I've had that experience. Not often, but it has happened. It's like falling in love."
Hoshino had never fallen head over heels in love himself, but went ahead and nodded anyway.
"That's got to be a very important thing, right?" he said. "For our lives."
"It is," Oshima answered. "Without those peak experiences, our lives would be pretty dull and flat. Berlioz put it this way, a life without once reading Hamlet is like a life spent in a coal mine."
"A coal mine?"
"Just typical 19th century hyperbole."
"Well, thanks for the coffee," Hoshino said. "I'm happy we could talk."
Oshima gave him a big grin in reply.